Hey everybody, welcome to Miscast Commentary. It's Joe Finley here. We've got a special episode for you today. A while back, you might remember that I interviewed Connor Ratliff and Patrick Kottner from the George Lucas talk show. And in my discussion with them, they were talking about a documentary that was actually being made about the show. So fast forward through a pandemic and a couple of extra years, and we have the director and cinematographer of that documentary, I'm George Lucas, a Connor Ratliff story, Ryan Jacoby and Marsh Chamberlain. We got to talk for a really good chunk of time about their entire process and what they liked about improv and all these other things. But before we do that, I wanted you to have a look at the trailer for the movie. Check it out.
It's poison.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the George Lucas Talk Show.
Hello, I'm George Lucas, creator of Star Wars.
I'm George Lucas, creator of Star Wars.
What is the George Lucas talk show? It is important.
Fundamentally, it is a talk show that George Lucas hosts.
So Connor plays George Lucas.
And John, you're also an author.
That's true. You're also an author.
Yeah.
He does an insane impression, and it's lasted for a very long time.
I was expecting something spiteful, and instead, I got something entirely different.
I don't know why he does it.
Does it make sense to you that Connor pretends to be George Lucas every month?
Everything that's funny to me about George Lucas has to do with success and failure. When I was in my 20s, all I wanted was to be successful in show business, and I couldn't make it happen.
Who is Connor Ratliff?
I don't know how to answer that question right now.
There are times where he gets incredibly honest and vulnerable and says something that I know is 100% Connor talking. Appearing to be a man driven by fear, and then doing things that are quietly fearless.
Thank you all, and may the Force be with you.
Why am I doing this? Why do I care if a bunch of strangers like a thing I do? If I do a show and 10 people see it and they love it, is that as good as doing a show that a million people see? I don't know.
This should be private, right? It feels like it should be private.
It's a great looking documentary, and it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. I hope you like the interview. Check it out. Hey, everybody. I am here with the director and cinematographer of I'm George Lucas, a Connor Ratliff story, Ryan Jacoby and Marsh Chamberlain. Thank you guys so much for joining me. How's it going?
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Joe.
Now, I read that you guys were working with a really bare bones crew. What size of a crew are we talking about?
Yeah, like half of us are here right now. So we've got, I'm the director and producer, Marsh is the cinematographer and producer, and then we have our producer, Anna Maria, and then we have our editor, Rob Malone, and then a bunch of co-producers and a lot of help here and there, and our composer. It was a very small crew. I would often be running, you know, sound too on set, or Marsh would be running sound while also getting picture.
What kind of challenges do you face as a really small crew when you're trying to do a behind-the-scenes documentary for a stage show?
I mean, I definitely know that you fill us in on some of the challenges that were specific to the image, but in some ways they're the same in that, you know, Connor is a fast-moving person. He's an improviser, as you know, and we had to develop those same set of improvisational documentary skills very quickly in order to keep up. I mean, I'm sure you have a few instances, Marsh, where you kind of had you on your toes.
Yeah, Connor keeps you on your toes in a good way. At the time I was in corporate, so I was doing a lot of every shot has to be perfect, every shot has to be planned out. So this was a great exercise for me to just kind of let go, as documentary film typically does, you know, remind you that you're very much not in control, and the playfulness of that and the ability to kind of let go of some of those restrictions and really learn from Connor along the way about improv and how that can be taken into documentary filmmaking was a lot of fun for sure.
Now, you mentioned Anna Maria Sefilis. How did you guys connect with her to get her to co-produce the movie?
Yeah, we knew we were going to need... So Marsh and I, this is our second movie that we worked on together. The previous one, Marsh directed. And so he said, okay, let's do that sort of creative collective thing where we're both filmmakers. Now you're going to direct this one, which was a huge challenge to me. I, you know, kind of was enjoying my role of being producer. And so we kind of agreed, okay, well, Marsh, if you're going to be the cinematographer and one of the producers, we need a producer who knows the comedy world intimately and can navigate that, because we're both fans of comedy. We were both really getting into the sort of New York indie comedy scene. But I kept noticing Anna Maria showing up at every single show I went to. She was like somehow right behind me. And I was like, who is this familiar person? We clearly have the same taste in like obscure comedians. And so I just kind of reached out and said, hey, would you be interested in joining our little production? Based on that, but also based on that she was doing a really amazing work at CISO. I don't know if you're familiar with that app. Yep. It was this short-lived, you know, comedy app. And so she had done some really great shows on that. And I was like, well, I think this will work out. And so Patrick made the formal introduction. And then I think we pretty much had our crew set by, I want to say, like March of 2019. The whole team was, production team was assembled.
Now, this is more of a technical question for Marsh, but as the cinematographer, how did you keep a consistent look throughout the entire documentary when it's kind of going all over the place?
I mean, I think a part of that is conversations that Ryan and I would have in terms of vision. And I also think there's a shorthand that we have after having the opportunity to work together on a previous film and some other little side projects. So we're able to kind of work our way through that early on. I think what's great about documentaries is you respond to the moment. And as long as you're, you know, using the same camera or the same camera family, it really gives you that ability to be responsive and to keep things looking the same way. It's really funny though, we shot on the C300 Mark I, which is quite an old camera when you think about it, which is kind of funny to say because it's a beast of a camera, a landmark camera. And it was just one that we had at the time that we didn't have to rent, we didn't have to buy, and we love Canon. And so for us, it fit the sort of rough around the edges, raw and fun aspects of the show in a way that we really, really enjoyed.
That's awesome. How did you guys go about picking Connor and this trio and George Lucas Talk Show as the subject for the documentary?
Yeah, so as I alluded to, Marsh and I worked on a project before this for a PBS affiliate called America Reframed. It's called We Breathe Again, and it's about four Alaska natives dealing with intergenerational trauma and suicide among their people. A very different documentary, you might imagine, than this one. And while we were finishing up post-production on that one, I needed to find something of an outlet, like some type of levity. And I was a fan of the Chris Gethard show, and I know you were too. And I think I started telling Marsh about, oh, there's this show called The Chris Gethard Show, and I'm really enjoying it. And there's this guy, Connor Ratliff, on it. And he's doing this show on, you know, in the UCB East, they called it The Beast back then, the East Village UCB. It was a midnight show. It became this like cult phenomenon that it was kind of like you were kind of like cool if you knew about it, but cool in a, you know, quote unquote way, because it's all very nerdy. But I would make it a regular thing where I would try to go like every month starting in 2016 or 2017. And sometime in 2018, I said, Marsh, you have to come to this. It's like, you're going to love it. And so I think you came at the end of 2018. And after we were like, you know, I want to do something with these guys. I don't know what, but let's just like reach out and see what happens. And I don't know if you want to pick up the story from there, Marsh.
Well, Ryan kind of tricked me because it was not really, but because projects go where they're supposed to go. But originally, I came in. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, huge fan of comedy, especially kind of basement comedy and things like that. And so I latched on to the George Lucas Talk Show right away. The basically within the first 30 seconds of being there for the first time, Ryan invited me. And so when he suggested we reach out to them to see if we could film with them in some kind of fashion, I was instantly hooked. And it was originally going to be kind of a mockumentary, you know, short. And of course, it became a 90-minute feature. And I had sworn off of features for a while after We Breathe Again because of how long that project took to make. But like I said in the beginning, you know, it became clear after filming, probably before filming with them for a whole year, that there was much more to tell and a feature was necessary.
And I think it's fair to say, you know, both of us were pretty big Star Wars fans. I had kind of left it dormant for a while. The special editions came out in what, 97? And I was like the exact right. I was like, you know, 11 years old when those came out, and my friends were super into it. I got super into it. We used to make fake lightsabers with bamboo sticks and try to do choreography. Like, I was a pretty big Star Wars nerd as a kid. And then, I went to film school and I was just like, well, let me get into more serious art, you know, and sort of, I would always go see the movies, but that was about it. And so this project, it really helped me feel like a kid again in the best possible way. It was incredibly fun and also challenging, you know, to keep up with the person that Connor Ratliff is. And as much as there is the Star Wars and George Lucas of it all, because I went down that same deep dive into studying George Lucas as a filmmaker. Like, I really loved actually that documentary that came with The Phantom Menace. I forget what it's called, Beginning or something like that. It's so good. They'll never make it again, right? Because they didn't, it's like they weren't aware the cameras were there. It's like perfect. And in some ways you would probably wonder, like, why did you want to make movies seeing that documentary? Because George looked miserable the whole time, but I still wanted to make movies based on it. When we came to this project, though, I was just as interested in Connor as a person. Like, that was really the question that drove us both, is like, who is this lovable madman and why is he doing this? And let's figure it out.
It's fascinating too, because Ryan and I, we went to film school, but a big part of film school for us were all these behind the scenes making of documentaries. It was the Star Wars one. It was the amazing ones that were done for the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh yeah.
And so I think the spirit of that really spoke to the fact that, like, it's not just about what you see when the show is put on, it's what happens behind it. And then of course, as documentary filmmakers, we can't help but want to go deeper and see where it takes us.
How do you go about making a documentary with such a specific subject that you want to make accessible to people who didn't know who Connor or what George Lucas talk show was?
Yeah, that was the major challenge, is remembering that we want even our mothers to understand this movie. You know, there's a lot of deep dive geekiness that is, if you're a huge George Lucas talk show fan, there's going to be so many little Easter eggs for you that we don't even have time to cover. There's like half a second shot and you're like, I know what that is. But for the rest of us, it's like, we just wanted to, you know, what's the phrase? A good story well told. We wanted anybody to be able to come in and understand what the George Lucas talk show is. And I think the team was really helpful in particular in making sure that I remembered that bit, that people don't know what the George Lucas talk show is. We have to slowly ease them in, because my whole sort of obsession was like unfolding Connor. And it's really the interplay of those two that makes the movie the movie. And so part of helping to understand, you know, what is the George Lucas talk show is all of Patrick's archival. Patrick has been shooting the George Lucas talk show since 2014 or so. And so I basically just sat down on my couch and played, like, it must have been like 300 hours of, you know, George Lucas talk shows that I was either watching or scrubbing through to find specific moments that would speak to this main narrative. And so it became not just like, let's show every great and funny moment from the George Lucas talk show. It's how does it tell the story of who Connor is and how the George Lucas talk show came to be. And so that anything that wasn't that, at least, you know, is on the cutting room floor.
Took a lot of patience, both with filming and also Ryan asked a lot of the same questions many, many times to just very carefully and delicately get a little deeper each time. And then on the other side of it, along the way, Anna Maria keeping us organized and on track and making sure that we're capturing what we need to capture. Big picture view.
That's great. Now, Connor's really well known for putting his vulnerabilities at the forefront. He did that a lot at TCGS. He did his Dead Eyes podcast, all these other things. Does that make him an easier subject to work with on the documentary, or is it harder in some way?
It's an interesting thing, because Connor as a performer is incredibly vulnerable. Connor as a person, and he won't even mind me saying this, is pretty guarded. he has a certain amount of information that he will, you know, fill you in on. And the rest is like, if you ever listen to his podcast, 12 Hour a Day, the joke, besides for anybody who doesn't listen to the podcast, it's a show where he and his, you know, good friend JD Amato would talk for 12 hours straight, and they would talk about industry stuff and life and everything. But the ongoing joke was you had to get to hour 10 of the show before they revealed anything personal. And so it was kind of the same process for Connor the person. You know, he would tell you anything you ever wanted to know about the process of making the George Lucas talk show. But when it came to who is he, as Marsh alluded to, it was asking many questions over and over again, but also just pure, like, the time. he granted us so much time with him. And so, you know, we had one interview in June of 2019, and we got through some of the superficial things we needed, then another in September, then another in November. And that November one was like the gold mine for me of like, okay, I guess I trust Ryan and Marsh, you know, like I'm letting them into my apartment. And so the vulnerability that he shows as a character, we started to see it, you know, as a person too. We just kind of wore him down, honestly.
That's what he would say for sure. He was always willing to talk to us, which I think was just wonderful, because when you have a subject like that, you know, the chances of you being able to tell a story is that much higher, because you'll see some scenes where, you know, we're backstage, he's tired, it's after multiple shows potentially. And he'd talk with us for an hour and a half, and maybe a minute of that is in the movie. You know, there's a commitment on his side as well as ours.
How long were you shooting with them total for the film?
Yeah, let's see. It would have been March of 2019 through January of 2020. Then a pandemic happened, and we picked up for like a Zoom interview in the middle. So that would have been June of 2020. Marsh shot some pivotal stuff. We won't spoil what. And then in July of 2020, we did a Zoom interview with Connor, just kind of checking in, like, how's everything going? And the rest of that, after that, you know, there's some 2020 and I think even some 2023 material, but just a tiny little bit. Most of this is a 2019 time capsule.
Did the pandemic lead you guys to question whether or not you even wanted to continue the story?
Absolutely. I mean, it really made me question a lot. You know, is this, why are we doing this? You know, there's horrible things going on in the world. Do we need a documentary about a guy pretending to be George Lucas? It was like all the existential questions were going on for us. It was really hard. And it also challenged our narrative, you know, like, do we only tell the story we set out to tell? Is the pandemic now the story? Like, how much weight is it going to, you know, to hold? And I'm very happy with the sort of balance we struck, where indeed 2020 through 2023 ish is a really pivotal part of the movie, but it doesn't change the core story that we are trying to tell. And it doesn't feel sort of forced. It felt like it's what the movie wanted. It's funny. I've begun to talk about the movie as its own entity, where it's like I had all these visions and you know, thoughts about what it was supposed to be up front. And then by getting to the end of it, it was just like, no, it'll show you what it wants to be. And in the same way, we realized when we tried to put too much of the COVID material in, it just wasn't the movie anymore.
Now that's great. What was it like working with them? Like, what was their dynamic with each other? And what was their dynamic with you when you were following them around?
Yeah, if you've seen any of the George Lucas talk show on, you know, the live stream, the Twitch era, they kind of make Patrick their punching bag, right? You know, he's the one they're constantly making fun of. And that has been true since day one. We captured a lot of that dynamic. I mean, the truth is that there's, in any sort of triangle of people, there's always going to be two people ganging up on the other one. And that is also very much there, where there's definitely times where Patrick and Griffin will be like, Connor, please just listen to us, or, you know, vice versa or whatever. But that sort of like constantly punching and making fun of Patrick, that's very real. And they're very real dynamic. And there's a scene that's very funny of them doing that in real time that we're pretty glad that we captured.
And Patrick's an interesting one, because he was never supposed to be part of the show. He was getting roped into being a warm-up comic for an episode or something, and now he's part of the whole cast.
I mean, Patrick's very humble. He is really funny. Like, he could be a comedian. If you follow him on social media, he's funnier than most people. He's got really great timing. Like, there was a recent show where his microphone went out, or no, just his visual went out, his camera went out, and he was just playing along with the bit of doing visual gags for like 45 minutes. It's like, he's like a Buster Keaton. We've got, they just have this third guy who's wildly talented. I don't think he expected this sort of getting pushed on the stage when just doing the sort of like producing the show. But I think the fans saw, you know, once he was there, he was never going to leave. The dynamic just made sense that he's also doing the hard thing of being the straight man. It used to be that George Lucas had to sort of be the straight man, and Griffin, or, you know, Sean, who played Jar Jar before Griffin, they got to be the zany sort of sidekick. But now it's like George gets to be zany and the sidekick gets to be zany, and Patrick has to sort of keep them on the rails.
The challenge for me was always to keep the camera straight if I was laughing too hard. That was the, we had most of the time we had one camera. So we're jumping around. We're responding to what's happening. And yeah, you got to keep it together. You got to keep it together when they're, when they get on a roll, which is often.
And then you've got Griffin, who's really well known. He's been in a lot of stuff. I know he's known these guys for a long time, but how does he end up in the Watto costume, the nose and the helmet and all that?
Yeah, he even says as much, that when they knew that Sean was going to be heading out to LA and he can no longer do the show, Griffin, I think the phrase he used is, sensed an opportunity he wanted to pounce on. And so he was very much into, he already had this fully formed Watto character. He had already been playing around with it. And so he was just doing anything he could to try to convince Connor to let him do it. Now everyone's like, oh, you know, Griffin's the star of the show in some ways. Like, you know, he gets to be the zany one. And there's, I mean, all three of them, there's like t-shirts and stuff made of all of them, little, you know, fan-made stuff. But I swear, like, Watto is like the fan favorite, because he's just so over the top and absurd. And Griffin is just a wildly talented person. It kind of makes sense. Like, it just fits the way he gets to be, gets to sort of do his own special interests. Like, he has this sort of mathematical mind about like box office returns and like all of these things that he like works into conversation. He gets to be this sort of like industry insider who's, you know, trying to, oh, hello, Figaro. Cat's here, who's trying to give that sort of like dirty Hollywood vibe. And so I just think it's a really good dynamic that they have going. I also love the way Griffin always like one-ups Connor, or like they're doing that sort of alley-oop sort of thing. And the way that they work, like, they're so quick on their feet, and some of it is just sheer hours logged with each other at this point. But there's always been this type of like brain mind meld thing they have going, where they can literally figure out what each other is thinking and enhance whatever joke is going to be. So I love the duo. I also just loved the way Sean interacted with Connor, because it was a very different vibe, but it also worked.
Yeah, it was really incredible to see Griffin and Connor together backstage, because you'd think that they'd talk a lot. And, you know, we capture one big scene where they're prepping for a particular show. But most of the time, that was very unique for them. That wasn't really typical. So it's cool to see them like, oh, I got something I'm going to surprise you with. And that's about all you get, right? And then they're just there for the show. It's almost like they're up for just seeing how they can surprise each other and whatever comes from it. Plus, you know, obviously, as you mentioned, Watto in Griffin's way is the best part about that. But it is kind of fun to see him backstage in half Watto, right? Like, where he hasn't quite put on maybe the nose yet. And you see the pieces of Watto coming together.
Awesome. So you guys raised money on Kickstarter to get this movie going. You ended up exceeding your goals. How was that feeling while you were going through that and you were watching the money come in?
Yeah, we were elated. The first one that we, the crowdfunding we did was in July of 2019. And that was, we had sort of realized that it might be a feature, but not yet. We were really just fundraising for a short. And so we did everything just as like a proof of concept up until that point. And we had actually done a lot of filming between, it would have been, you know, like I said, March and July. And so we kind of knew it was a thing, and we were able to share some clips and share our excitement, because often when you're doing, you know, a Kickstarter, you have nothing to show yet. You just have an idea. And so we were really happy at like where we were, what we thought we were in the middle of the process, which is really funny. We were very much at the beginning, but we had so much built in enthusiasm, you know, fans of the New York show just came on board immediately. And then when we came to, man, it would have been, you know, November of 2022, there were thousands more fans at that point because of the whole like Twitch live streaming era of it all. And so the 2019 Kickstarter took us the whole month to reach our goal. The 2022 Kickstarter took like a day. We were done by the time we even talked about it. And so as filmmakers, you're constantly, you know, trying to raise whatever you can. It's an industry that is, you know, not exactly just throwing money at you to make independent documentaries. And so this was really a wonderful way to make sure that we could actually finish and get us to festivals and everything.
Yeah, we have a huge thank you to send out to all the Georgie Porgies. They really made this film possible.
Yeah, the Georgie Porgies. These guys have super loyal fans. Went through TCGS and went into George Lucas talk show, and it's only grown from there. So what did you see in their response to the whole process of the filmmaking and the release?
They're also just some of the kindest, smartest, funniest people on the planet. It's just like somehow everyone's found each other, like the chat rats, as they call them. It's just as fun reading their comments as it is, you know, watching the guys and the guests. You could not ask for a better fan base. And they've already showed up to, you know, we went to Slam Dance in January, and there were a few, you know, Georgie Porgies that showed up there, and one of them brought Patrick a birthday cake. It's just, and some others, they saw it in our first screening on Saturday, and then they came again on Tuesday. And it's just amazing. You know, it's just so supportive, the kindest people. I have two things that are sort of true about this documentary. One, the central question is, what would George do in terms of how would he make a movie? What I mean by that is, we could do fan service and purely have made this for Georgie Porgies, but I don't think that would be doing right by them. I think the better question is, like, what would George Lucas do? And he would make it for himself. And in making for himself, hopefully it would resonate. And so whenever we went too far down the rabbit hole of, like, how do we make sure, you know, the Georgie Porgies are pleased? We're like, well, right. Center it back. What's making us happy? What's working for us? And let's hope, you know, it resonates with them. And so that's true. And on the flip side, I really do want them to love it. You know, that's the truth. And so it's almost just like, I'm hoping this thing that I was really into will mean something to them. And so far, the early reactions have been like, I'm just so pleased that they're into it. They get it immediately. The fans that have seen it understood what we were trying to do. We were trying to tell more than just a story about the George Lucas talk show. And they understood the whole, like, you come in for this zany thing, and hopefully you leave feeling like, oh, that was a little bit more emotionally resonant than I thought it would be. And they seem to get that immediately, which is really gratifying.
Yeah, I was fortunate we were able to, like, and, you know, I was fortunate that Ryan introduced me to it, to go to shows when we weren't filming. When you go, you just, if you're there for the right reasons, you feel very welcome. You feel very included. The spirit that Connor, Griffin, and Patrick have in putting the show on is fully embraced. And it feels like a safe space for you to, like, let your nerd out, let yourself out. And so we were kind of hoping to capture that in a tiny bit with the film. And I think we did, based on some of the response we've been getting, but that was, you know, that was always something we were hoping for.
Are you able to explain to the audience who might not know what this is, what actually goes into making the George Lucas talk show?
Yeah, it's both really involved and really simple. You know, I forget what they always say. It's like the lowest concept ever. It's just obviously, you know, Connor is a comedian improviser and he pretends to be retired filmmaker George Lucas. Okay, we get that part. But how does it actually work? They are all incredible improvisers. And so they've inhabited these characters. As we said, Griffin is just his version of Watto. And Patrick plays a version of himself, which is like sometimes grumpy, sometimes ecstatic, or overenthusiastic producer. The real magic, I think, is in the guests playing along with the bit. You know, things are always going really well when they have a guest who can just sort of seamlessly blend in and be asking questions, the same questions they would want to ask actual George Lucas. And so that seems to be where the, I don't know, a lot of the amazing bits come from. But at the same time, I can also imagine a version of the show where they didn't have any guests and they just sort of like bantered among themselves. I actually don't have to imagine it. It's a lot of the show is them doing this after the guests go off. You know, they had that whole like after dark section too, where they have different guests come on. But it's hard to, I'm sort of giving you two answers, because there's the stage show version of it, which was a lot more, you know, it's an hour long show. It felt almost like a real talk show. It just was a tight hour, except that it was improvised, which is a funny thing to say. You know, it's, Connor would always say, you know what's improvised? Conversation. And most talk shows are not improvised. They're just pre-written questions and they do the, you know, pre-tapes and all these things. And so he wanted to get rid of the artifice. And to me, that's a really funny concept, is getting rid of the artifice of a talk show through the most artifice there is, which is him pretending to be somebody he's not. But somehow those two things work together, in my opinion.
That's great. Now, the story in a documentary, it tends to change. It's not something you can always control. You mentioned that at one point this was going to be a mockumentary short and it becomes a full-fledged documentary feature. Was there any other way that the story changed through the process of filming?
Well, we knew, Marsh and I had a lot of talks about, well, okay, now that there's more to this than we thought in like July of 2019, we're like, well, what it would be like if we could go to Missouri, if we go to where Connor grew up and interview his parents and see, you know, the environment that he grew up in. And when he agreed to do that, that's when everything got much deeper and we feel like we had a feature on our hands. Because if we didn't have that ability to sort of like open the picture up a little bit, I think it would feel very claustrophobic and very like repetitive. But yeah, were there any other points for you, Marsh?
I mean, that was definitely a big one for sure. And we weren't quite sure, I think, for a long time, how much of that would be in the film versus how much of the show would make it in the film. And I mean, the amount of things ended up on the cutting room floor, which I wasn't really as much of a part of. I mean, that has a lot to do with the collaboration between Ryan and Rob Malone and Anna Maria in kind of piecing all of this ridiculous amount of footage together in a way that made sense. I know that the beginning of the film changed dramatically multiple times. That was one of the things. It's always hard. You can find out how you're going to end something. It's always hard to know how you're going to start it. I think that's something that we've struggled with for a while. But the beauty of documentaries is, I mean, so much of it does come together in post. And I think there's a reason for that.
Was there anything unexpected about their personal and professional dynamic as they were evolving as people and as the show was evolving?
Well, they really do lose their minds, as they think. I think Connor says this at some point, you know, in the Twitch era during the pandemic, we lose our minds, but it's the sanest we feel all week. I witnessed that happen in real time because the hour-long show at UCB, I want to say it's like professional because obviously it is in a certain way. It is professional in that they know what they're doing and they put it together. But I'm just saying it felt like a tightly run ship compared to the 16-hour marathons or, you know, however long they went in the Twitch era. So everything transformed from I guess what happened is they brought more of themselves to how could you not? You know, if you're on stage for an hour, you get to play the character of George or, you know, Watto. But when you're on camera, you know, in your living room or whatever, over a webcam, at some point, yourself is just going to slip through. And so I think that's what started to happen is a merging of their characters and themselves. And then I think, as we were also talking about before, that Connor got to not be so much of a straight man anymore. He got to be zany Uncle George, doing physical comedy, doing, you know, all sorts of things that he didn't get a chance to do. And then, like we said, you know, Patrick got to sort of take over. And at some point, they would just leave Patrick to, you know, to the guest, and they would just disappear off screen. So yeah, it was kind of fun to watch them transform. And then if you go to see a show now, they take like some of the UCB era of it, and they take some of the live stream era of it, and they sort of blend them into something new, where it's a little bit more free flowy. So like the After Dark thing is now a part of the show, but it's also tighter because they have only so much time, you know, to do it on stage.
Yeah, I guess they have to be really precise about when Dark happens so they know when to start it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned premiering at Slamdance. What was that whole experience like for you guys?
It's really amazing. I mean, I guess I had imposter syndrome going in before that. You know, I got the phone call and kind of played it cool. Like, you know, hello, I'm so-and-so from Slamdance. I just wanted you to know what you got in. And I was like, oh, great. Thank you. And then I hung up and I called Marsh and Henry immediately. I was like, we got into Slamdance? Is this a mistake? You know, because we had been viewing it as this fun little thing that will get out into the world in a small way. And hopefully it'll make a big impact on the people that matter to us. But to get to screen it in this kind of punk rock, I don't know, weirdos and freaks festival, which is our people. By the end of the first day, we were like, oh, I guess it makes sense why we're here. We do fit this Slamdance scene. And we just had such a great time getting to finally get it in front of an audience. That was the first time. It was a world premiere. And then it was also amazing to get to meet other filmmakers and talk about life and art and, you know, hang out in Park City for a week. So I couldn't have asked for a better experience. I don't know about you, Marsh.
Yeah, it was a dream come true. And just as shocking as Ryan illustrated there. I think 5+ years you work on something that you're passionate about, that the only reason you're working on it is because you're passionate about it. We tend to stick with that when we take on projects like this. Does it matter to us? Is it interesting? Is it fulfilling personally? Because so much time and effort goes in to making, you know, anything really, but especially a film like this. So to have the opportunity to share that with a group of other filmmakers and a crowd like that goes to Slam Dance was really special.
Now, we already mentioned the Georgie Porgy's reaction to the documentary, but what was the reaction to people who didn't know Connor as well?
For sure. We sat in the back just to sort of get a view of everybody. And we were very comfortable within the first, our nerves were settled within the first like 10 minutes, because not only were the sort of jokes that we knew were going to do well, doing well, but like all these little moments that I was like, oh, wow, they're getting it. And they're laughing at things that are just not just funny on the surface, but funny sort of just about Connor and who he is. And it was really gratifying to see with an audience. There's so much energy there. Saturday night, everyone wanted to have a good time. And then we got to do a Q&A, you know, moderated Q&A afterwards, and got to talk to some of the fans. And it was also really special that Connor was able to come as well to Slam Dance. Not every, you know, film gets to have their talent and their whole crew show up. And so he was very supportive. He just takes everything in stride, though. You know, to him, I asked him afterwards, I was like, is it weird seeing yourself up on screen like that? You know, you've done projects where it's like a version of you, but this is you. And he's like, I don't know, man, my life is so weird. It feels like it makes sense, you know, to have this be happening. But yeah, I think one of the more special things that happened, too, is right before the screening, me, Connor, and Marsh got to have just like a quiet little dinner across the street. And it reminded me of how the project all began in, would have been, you know, January of 2019 instead of January 2024, just sort of pitching him this idea of the documentary. So it came full circle.
Now that Slam Dance is over, where are we going to get the chance to see the movie?
Yeah, so there's going to be, we're allowed to talk about some of the things. It's not that we don't want to. It's just we're trying to play it by the rules with all these different film festivals. And so the one we're allowed to announce right now is Make Believe Seattle.
Nice.
It's a genre film festival. So we're going to be out there from, what is it going to be, March 21st through the 26th, I believe. And so we're going to screen on March 23rd. There's only one, you know, location all the film screen. So we're going to be there. That's going to be 2:15 on that Saturday. And then we definitely have a lot of stuff coming up that we're really excited to be able to tell you about, but we can't yet. You know, soon enough, you'll be able to see it, you know, hopefully in New York, hopefully some other cities, and then hopefully no matter where you are, you'll be able to see it. I can at least say that.
Well, I tell you, it looks like it's going to be a really good experience. And if it ends up showing up anywhere around me, I'm going to make sure to come out and support you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So what's next on the docket for you guys? Do you have any projects in the works?
It's hard to say. You know, I always have 20 things I'm developing in my head. But after going to Slam Dance, something about that experience inspired me. I can't talk too much in depth about it, because like I have this thing that when things are a seedling, you just kind of have to water them and do your thing with them. And once it starts to actually like grow into a plant, then I can talk about it. But suffice to say, at Slam Dance, what I thought my next project was going to be completely turned into something else. I think it'll be a little bit more personal to me, and it might be kind of an adventure. And so I'm really looking forward to it. I've been talking to Marsh about it obsessively, and he's been listening to all of my ramblings. But yeah, it'll be if it happens, it'll be very different from this project.
That's what we do. We ramble at each other a lot, and it's always helpful. And I'm kind of in the same boat. I learned from my many in-depth conversations with Ryan to trust the universe a little bit and keep your feelers out and stay open-minded and sort of see what projects might appear. And it's always something that you don't expect, or it's something that you've had your eye on for a long time, and then it turns and it's something very different. So we'll see. I'm sure something will come up here sooner rather than later. It always does.
That's great. Where can we follow you guys so we can learn more about you and the movie?
Yeah. So I'm georgelucas.com is our main website, and we've been doing a pretty good job keeping, you know, all of the press details and everything there. Our trailer's up there if you haven't seen it yet. We're also on social media at @GeorgeLucasDoc. And then I'm on Instagram, not really on Twitter or Facebook much, just at Ryan Jacoby.
Mostly just Instagram at Marsh Chamberlain, where I like to share and hang out. And yeah, mentioned the website. That's a good spot. If you haven't already, check out the George Lucas Talk Show's YouTube page. A lot of great stuff on there.
Well, let's make sure to follow these guys and go check out the website so you get all the news, so the things that they couldn't tell us today, we can find out about later. Thank you guys so much for your time today. It was such an awesome experience talking to you.
Thanks so much. Yeah, thanks for having
Thanks so much.
Well, that's it for this one. I want to thank Ryan and Marsh for joining me for this interview. Make sure you go follow them at all the places they mentioned. I'm going to have links to that down below. We're still going to release a commentary episode this weekend, so stay tuned for that. It's 2 for the price of 1 this week, baby. So stay tuned for that. Until then,
peace.